Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I am Brad Rose. I am an artist, composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and somebody who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Sarah DeVacci, Molly Abomsawin, Chuck Johnson, Amelia Courthouse, so many more. But this week, I am so thrilled to have Whitney Johnson, a.k.a. Matches, somebody who I've known for quite a while, and this was such a fun opportunity to do this. I kind of didn't realize until we had started talking again, setting this episode up, but the very first Matches release ever, Seraphastra, I believe was the name of it, came out on my old label, Digitalis Limited, in like 2013, 2012. And that's awesome. That makes me feel, that just made me feel really good. And Whitney and I got into a really interesting conversation towards the end of this episode about demos, like labels and demos and, you know, working with people on their first release and stuff and the just how wonderful that can be and how those opportunities seem fewer and fewer these days. Yeah, I don't know. So, and this is like a great example. Like that was the thing I loved doing back when I ran a real label. You know, the Jewel Garden is my label now, and it's more of a vanity project for my own works, but something I miss, you know, not enough to start a label, but a real label, but something I really do miss. And I think that those, yeah. But so, you know, I mean, Whitney was always going to do things cause she's freaking incredible. But that was like a really fun going down memory lane kind of thing. Anyway, she's got two new albums out, one under her name, one under Matches. Stana and Jesus, she pronounces them and I can't remember. Anyway, they're really out on Track City. They came out at the end of September. Yeah, I don't know, man. This one was so much fun and, hope you enjoy it. And yeah. My guest today is a musician, a songwriter, a composer, an educator. There's probably a whole list of other things. But anyway, it's Whitney Johnson. Welcome to the show.
Woo. Hi, thanks for having me.
So you did a thing that I've kind of always wanted to do, and I think it's awesome. You released two albums on the same day.
Yeah.
Under two different names. Mm-hmm. And I have like all sorts of questions around that, and obviously the two albums. Okay, so it's can you pronounce? I don't have the exact pronunciations of these. So
they're Swedish words, and okay. I think Hav okay. is pretty much the same. Stina, okay. I think is how you would pronounce the other.
Okay,
perfect. But there also might be because it has kind of like a tonal thing, so it might be like Stina.
Right. Okay, yeah. I'll have to. My partner speaks a bit of Swedish. I wonder. I should have asked her. She's on a work trip, so I can't. So, anyway, so I guess the first question is, God, where do you even start with this? How, like, as these two you were making these records, or how did, like, I don't know, go back to the beginning. How did this start? Where it ended up? Is these two separate things? Did it start in the same place or?
Yeah, kind of. They came together through a lot of fragments that were assembling at the same time, I guess. Okay. Mm-hmm. This started back in 2021 with a research trip that was just kind of like a self-directed, almost like a mystery exploration of this cult called the Cult of Hermaphroditus in Greece and Cyprus. And I was like, what is this about? Where was this active? What's it, you know, worshiping exactly? So that was the starting point. I didn't know what it would become, but it was a lot of field recording and video and just kind of abstract research, artistic research. And then you know, time goes by, I'm recording little fragments of things. Some of them are like songs, some are sonic kind of thing. There was like a composition that I did. Actually, it was supposed to be a vocal composition that turned into like a string ensemble on the record. But yeah, so all these things are coming together and I realize they aren't the same thing. You know, it was like, there's something different happening here and I don't know what to do with it. And I had the impulse to just kind of do something new.
Yeah.
You know, I had done the Matches trilogy, had done more like frequency kind of stuff under that name, but I was like, I want to actually do a very different record. So is that a new project or how does that come across as different? But it was the same time that this kind of classic Matches like noise tape stuff was still happening.
Right.
So they just kind of took on two different lives somewhere in those years. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I relate to that. I feel like, and this is from an outsider, but so like, obviously you have been working with Drag City for a little bit. I feel like you are on the perfect label to like, I feel like a lot of labels, you would come to them with like, hey, I've got two albums. And they would be like, what? But Drag City seems like they were probably totally game for anything.
Absolutely. And they were like, alter egos, evil twins. Cool. I love it. They got into the idea, I think, too.
That's awesome. So how did the sort of decision to release one under your own name and one as Matches, like, because I think about this thing all the time. Obviously, I got like a million different solo monikers, and I was having a conversation with a friend recently who she started like doing sound and music in the last couple years, and she was saying, "Oh, I guess I need a project name." And I was realizing, and I said it without even thinking, I was like, "Gosh, I kind of wish I would just stuck with doing things under my own name." And I was like, "Oh, I just said that. I don't know." I'm just curious, like how you differentiate those things, how that happened.
Yeah. I guess, you know, when I had come up with this name, Matches, a long time ago, I mean, 2009 or something.
Oh, wow.
It was like, I don't even know exactly where it came from. Yeah. It was really impulsive. I was a kid. I was just like, yeah, this is my artist name. You know, like as an artist, I'm going to go by this. And it is kind of an alter ego. It's like stepping into a persona or something. Mm-hmm. And it just stuck. And so now, all these years later, I feel like, yeah, it's a funny, it's really taken on a whole aesthetic world.
Yes.
You know, like it has a sound, a style, a process of making things, a kind of minimalism, maximalism thing, which is like usually a ton of just mess, but the actual like sources are pretty limited, you know, only a few instruments. And I wanted to expand that. I guess part of the expansion was playing the marimba. I just found it. So it came through a few different hands. There was like, apparently some landlord had like given it to someone who gave it to my friend's neighbor, Jenny Pulse and Tim Kinsella. And I share a practice space with them. So like somehow this marimba had made the way to my practice space and it was just there. And I started playing it. And that sound actually was kind of an origin point where it's that wood against metal. Yeah. I guess it's like a rubber mallet against wood against a metal tube. That combination just sounded so good. And so I was like, this isn't really a Matches thing. It's something else. So I'll just say it's me. It's like my actual given birth name.
I think about this all the time because I don't know, as like in the last few years, like my own work has, like, especially outside of music, like I'm not doing, I don't know, like visual art shows under as Charlatan. That would be weird.
Yeah.
At least that feels like it'd be. So then it's like trying to like, you know, connect with people who are not in this kind of experimental music world and explaining like, no, these are all me too. But it's just made me think about it a lot more in ways that I hadn't thought about it before. But I mean, ultimately, I don't know how much it matters, but.
And I guess it's true that it's a much more music world thing than art world thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are exceptions. There are artists, visual artists or gallery artists who have these persona names, but it's much less common, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember when these two records came out, I was like, oh, this is really cool and interesting. And I don't know. So hearing that, you know, you kind of were making these sort of, I don't know if in tandem is the right word, you know, I mean, I know how, like when I'm working on stuff, it's like, it's very rare that I'm like, I'm working on one thing.
Yes, absolutely.
And so like, And I think, how did you describe it? Like that they're like fraternal twins, or they're, what did you say? I can't remember.
Yeah. Fraternal twins make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought. Sorry. It's yeah. Monday morning, people, like, bear with me here. Well, you've got shows coming up.
Yeah.
I guess maybe you said next year. I don't know, but it's soon ish. Are they going to be Matches shows? Are they going to be Whitney shows? Are they going to be both? Are they going to be?
Yeah. That's a puzzle. So just because of my like life schedule, I did most of the touring for these records before they came out, which was kind of a funny order, but I was touring all summer. I did like a few different trips, but as far as this project, these projects go, these two, I guess, they were all Matches. They were like booked. Wow. But it was an ensemble for the first time. So I had played like very limited, in a very limited way with other people, but mostly I just played fully solo as this project. But this summer I had a cool, like really incredible band together playing mostly marimbas, but then like vocalizing, playing synthesizers, like all kinds of stuff. And so it was called Matches, but it was definitely a different era. Yeah. Yeah. So that was mostly all this summer. I think I'm going to do some solo stuff coming up this fall. And then next year, probably mostly solo, I would say, for this project, but who knows?
That's really, so how, like working with a band, touring with a band, how has that like changed your thinking about the project? Or like, I mean, is that an avenue you're wanting to explore more?
Yeah, the challenge was really like composing it, because I don't know, it's like I really love improvisation. I love the feeling of freedom when I'm playing, that like you can cut loose and like do a thing and let it become what it needs to become on that night. But there were also like real parts and also like vibes, kind of inspiration. So my score or whatever was really just text, but it was like in the beginning some very technical moments, like this marimba comes in on this moment on eighth notes, you hold it for this amount of time, it fades out, whatever. But then there were also parts that are like, here's a little story, or here are some like lyrics of this song that are buried on the recording you can't hear, or like, you know, something that's, and then some qualitative things like textures that are kind of crunchy and crackling or something. And so, yeah, there was a score for that set, but it was kind of, that was the challenge, is how much freedom and how much direction and finding the sweet spot. And each player had a different sweet spot. I think some people are like, just let me go, let me let it rip. Right. And then other people are like, I need some direction of what to do when. So yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Are there like recordings of any of these shows? I want to, like, I'm like so curious about this.
There are a few fragments of things. I don't know if any, there are a couple of board recordings maybe, but then the good like video recording is we finally coalesced or all came together in Chicago for the final like record release show. Mm-hmm. So some of the different groups where I played with Haley Four and Lula Asplund, a sound artist going east. And then I played a couple of duo shows with Jenny Pulse, and then Haley Ford joined up, and also Alan Sparhawk. And so all of us had like a quartet that was playing through the South and the West. And then Alan had to go back. And then it was like Jenny and Haley and I for a few shows too, as a trio. So it's very modular, that's, but we all came together as a five piece, I guess a quintet for the record release.
That's awesome.
And that's recorded. Yes.
Oh, that's very cool. Well, I hope that makes its way out into the world someday, because I'm super curious about that. That's really cool. Okay. Well, anything else coming up? I mean, you just released two albums. I feel weird being like, so what else you got coming up? But like, before we get into it, is there anything else?
That's also the blessing and the curse of like a multi-year two album process, is that like the end is really like stepping off a cliff kind of and seeing who can fly, I guess. So I'm working on new stuff, but slowly. I have seeds of a project about steel mills and doing field recording in steel mills, because my dad worked in a mill and my brother currently works in a mill, and I really want to like do a field recording process with those sounds. It's been such a part of my like personal history, but also my imagination. They have to run 24/7. So it's like these machines that are just clanking away on infinite loop for, you know, forever.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. it's really an astonishing process. So that's something I'm thinking about.
Oh, that's really cool. I want to talk more about that. I have a field recording something project that I've been working on about oil refineries, because where I grew up in West Tulsa, there are a bunch of oil refineries. And speaking of things that run 24/7, and then there's like whole other, you know, problems, aspects, things for that. But it's something, I've thought about it forever, and now I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. So
yes, I want to talk to you about how you got access too, because the steel mills have been very cagey.
I'm not going to talk about any of that on record.
But, off the record.
Yes. Awesome. Okay. Well, we have a tight schedule here, so I'm going to get into it here.
Yes.
And we're going to start. What is the first song, Whitney, that you remember?
Okay. The first song I ever remember hearing and singing is from a TV show called Pinwheel. Pinwheel or Pinwheels. And it was on cable at my grandma's house. So as a little kid, I remember going to my grandma's to watch her cable. And I was like, I love this show. And it had a theme song that was so lovely.
Oh, yeah.
And I still remember the song, but I don't remember anything about the show. It was a children's show.
Yeah, this was not in my brain at all. And then I looked it up and listened to it, and it was like, it all came back. Watched this show too. Like that, in that theme song. I was like, oh my God, this first 15 seconds before the singing start is the sound I've been chasing all my life, I think.
Yes.
It's like, I don't remember. I don't know what the show was, but it was a PBS thing, I guess. Cause I absolutely, as soon as I heard that, I was like, I viscerally remember this.
Yes. It's a primordial music moment.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, what is a song that makes you cry? Or at least if it doesn't make you actually cry, it makes you just kind of feel that way, whatever that way is.
Yeah, it's been some of both. So the song that I said is Peanut by Sunny Chirac, but it's actually the whole album Black Woman.
Yeah.
So much. There's so many people over the years. But at some point this became, so I have kind of like an intense Thanksgiving music ritual.
Okay.
Holiday is so fraught, and it's really, you know, messed up that we still continue to celebrate it. But then it also has all of this kind of memory of my own family and history. Mm-hmm. I always listen to Black Woman while I'm going for groceries. Like on my way there, and I usually put on headphones and like listen to it while I'm walking around the grocery store, thinking about all the people and what they're doing for this holiday.
Yeah.
And listen to it on the way home. And then sometimes it'll turn into like the Linda Chirac record Paradise on the way home, which I love. And so then it's a little bit more celebratory and lightens up, but yeah, deep sadness with that record and that song.
Yeah. God, it's such a, that's really, man, that like makes sense to me too. Cause it's such like a heavy, the sort of like heavy, not heavy in the way that I think of Sunny a lot of what, like it's, you know, Sunny is rips, like that's like when I first think about Sunny, like my first thing goes to, you know, just him just blowing the doors off. But I love this record because it just shows this other side that, I mean, God, you know, one of the all-time greats. But I'm like imagining, because I mean, we're getting close to that time of year, and thinking about, because I know that grocery trip, I know that in my bones. Imagining that with this record, and that's a lot. I get it though. That's like a really kind of powerful thing. That's really awesome. Yeah.
It's like, how did that happen?
Like, how did that ritual happen? Just
I think it was one time doing that, one Thanksgiving, one November, when I put it on and then it was like snowing. I was sitting in the car and I was playing it on the way to get all the stuff. I had all my lists of ingredients and thinking about the family that I was bringing to meet my family, but also the family that I had waiting for me there. And then, it's also like sociological, you know, it's about our history and I guess historical of this country and why it exists and like, what are we doing here?
Right.
And then, why are we ignoring our history, but then painting it in this other way? So anyway, like all that's just going through my mind, sitting in the car and seeing the snowfall on the windshield as I'm still letting it run, just like, because the song is hitting so hard and I don't want to turn off the song. So I think that was how it started.
Wow. That's all. That's incredible. Yeah, it is. It's a very existential album. best possible way. Well, on the other side of things, what's a song that'll put you in a better mood or lift your spirits, if you will?
Yeah. Okay. So I said, is it All Over My Face by Loose Joints? Uh-huh. But actually just like any of those Loose Joints tracks are immediate like happiness. And there's also some other Arthur Russell work that's kind of the opposite, you know, like heavier, maybe just, yeah, such an emotional range, but specifically that sub project, immediate joy. And I'm like also immediately dancing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that,
songs comes on. Yeah, that was one of my notes here, is it's like as soon as I hear this, it makes me want to get up and move my body.
Yes.
It is, and it's just like 12 minutes of bliss.
Yeah. It goes. That's true. It just goes and goes and goes.
I know. And honestly, it's like you could put it on an infinite, like a loop for hours, and I would just be like floating through the world or something, because it's super powerful also, but in a totally different way than say like Peanut or, you know, the Sonny Schrock album, because this is like, I don't know, it just, yeah, it's like you're walking on air or something.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Love. Have you heard, like, I didn't even realize, like, I was only kind of knew the one, there's apparently multiple versions of this, and I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, and I like know the one version,
right?
But I wonder, I gotta listen more to the others, because there are multiple vocal parts, right?
Yeah,
or mixes of the same vocal or something.
Yeah, there, because I was looking, it's like, oh, there's like a female vocal version, there's the band, like, I'm like, oh, I know this like 12 minute version, this is the one, which I don't know if it's the, I don't even know, I assume it's the original version, but the one I know is, it's like 12 minutes. And it's, I mean, it's like the version. I don't know. Anyway,
that's the version. Yeah. I mean, I read the biography of Arthur Russell. Uh-huh. I wanted to say autobiography, but it's like a almost ethnomusicological biography. Right. It's pretty deep or pretty long and dense. And like, they talk about this whole era where he's like versioning things, but also pressing them and just like running them to the club, basically. And that's a kind of wild process to imagine, where you're like, you have the facilities to like press a record really quick and just like literally take it to a DJ for that night. So I think that might've been some of the like versioning that happened too.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I could do like a whole thing on Arthur Russell, and I think about Arthur Russell a lot. And he will come up briefly later, so I'm not going to go too deep into this, but like, it's just still every time when I listen to him, And I've said this multiple times on the show, it just, I find it so astonishing that this stuff is 30 and 40 years old.
Yes, and absolutely.
Like, it still sounds forward thinking. And I don't know how, it's just, yeah, I don't even know. Like, and I even feel like, you know, Arthur Russell's kind of got his flowers and people like have come, like, understand like how amazing, but I don't even know if, like, there, we have a full realization of just what he was.
Yeah. It would almost be like you have to listen to his discography song by song to like feel the depth, because if you listen to any record, it like has its own world.
Yeah,
each record has its own world.
Yes. Absolutely. All right, everybody's favorite question: what is objectively the greatest song of all time?
Objectively, I did the thing I told myself I wouldn't do, which is say two. You know, because okay.
Love this too. It's like a 7-inch, right? It's like for the B side.
Yes. Yeah. So objectively, best song of all time, When You Are Mine by Prince, backed with Adagio for Strings by Samuel Barber. Because if we're having an alien, like learning about what is humanity, what is music, like this is the message. It has to be both sides of the coin, like perfect, pure pop. And also some of the deepest sadness in music, I think, that I've experienced. Like, that's humanity, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's, I think this is Wish You Were Mine. God, I'm, yeah, I think I can't remember who brought this up on the show once. And I think I even said, I was like, find me in the right moment and I will make an argument. This is the best song ever. So I'm glad that somebody did.
Okay.
And I feel like it's, God, it's like, It's one of those things that it seems simple and kind of straightforward, but as soon as you like really start listening to it, it's like, oh my God, like he is doing so many different things and seamlessly just weaving it all together. It doesn't make any sense to my brain logically. And I feel like Dirty Mind is probably my favorite Prince album, and I feel like it's also underrated, but and then Adagio for Strings is like, that feels like a piece of music that came from a different plane and was pulled out of it because it is otherworldly, unbelievable. If you listen to it too much, it'll like kind of break you into pieces.
Yes. So my first experience was playing it. There was like an Indiana like Allstate Orchestra that was this like special thing. I've played viola since I was a little kid, you know, in the context of my little Indiana school was really good. And then you get into the context of like the real thing. I was not very good. And so there's a recording of this like high school orchestra, the Allstate Orchestra, and I am totally all over the room, really messing up. Oh, like you can hear someone who's playing insane stuff with me. Oh my God. It's really high end for viola, stuff that I'm not great with, I don't really enjoy. And so it's I'm really trying to grab a pitch that I can't find, and it's definitely, it's like a solo, and it shouldn't be.
That's amazing.
So that also kind of changes my emotional landscape.
I would think so. God, wow. That's really interesting to hear. So my daughter is 11 and she started orchestra this year and started playing. Right. And she's doing cello.
Cool.
And so that's really interesting to hear, because like I didn't do orchestra or anything growing up and don't have any experience. Like I'm all self-taught and had no anything in school, so like this is all a new world to me. So hearing that is really interesting to see, you know, if she sticks with it, how it all works.
I'm so glad I did. I'm just thankful all the time that my school had an orchestra, you know. Like I was from Pennsylvania, in a place where there was no string orchestra in their school. My dad was laid off in Pennsylvania, got a job in Gary, Indiana, so we moved. And so it's kind of like the fact that he was laid off and we had to relocate to Indiana meant that I was in this school that happened to have an orchestra, and here I am, you know? It's like the biggest part of my life.
Isn't that so weird to think about? Like, it's like, would any of this exist if your dad hadn't got laid off?
Yeah, I think about that all the time. And like living in rural Pennsylvania versus like industrial Indiana, I mean, so many things would be different.
Yeah. God. Huh. Well, that's cool. That makes that sort of, and that, yeah, I don't know. That adds like another layer to that steel mill project you're talking about. So excited about that. Okay. Well, on a different tip, what is the song that most people, some group of people, I don't know who these people are, but they hate this song, but you don't care because you love it.
Okay. I feel like ABBA in general, quite contentious. The song Lay All Your Love on Me, I love so much.
Oh, it's a banger.
It's a banger. But some people are like, ABBA, it's saccharine. It's kind of like cheesy. It's heartless or soulless or something. And some people just find it annoying. But then there's the whole like other life of it with Mamma Mia, the musical. Mm-hmm. And that changes things. And there's a movie made of the musical. And so then it's kind of like done something to maybe ABBA's discography that's a little bit heartbreaking to me.
Right.
Because, I'm a huge fan, and it's kind of like perfect pop music to me in general, but this song.
This song is what, like, so one thing that's really funny is that ABBA has come up many times on this show, and usually it's in this context. So I think it's like, maybe we all secretly love ABBA and nobody wants to. I don't know, because I think every conversation I've had on here about ABBA has been, this is amazing. Oh my God, I love this. But this song is, I think the thing for me that set the chorus is so, it's kind of bananas. Like it is, there's, I don't even know. It's like this Gregorian choir vibe or something.
Yes.
It's just like how, and to put that in this pop song like that is
And still to come off like a disco banger, basically. Yeah. Like, you imagine people spinning on the middle of a like lit up, illuminated dance floor, but there's like a choir.
I know.
Yeah, it's so epic.
Yeah, I love it. I don't know. I think that like that's one of the things that this like one of my favorite things about doing this show is it kind of makes me listen to music I haven't listened to in a while or wouldn't listen to. And it has made me honestly realize that I have a real thing for ABBA because it keeps coming up. And every time it does, I'm just like, God, this rules.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you're not alone. I think a lot of noise musicians like ABBA for whatever reason, like harsh noise people, performance arts leaning maybe are like, ABBA, that's the one, that's the pop group.
Well, hey, everybody go listen to some ABBA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you consider yourself a romantic? Do you think of yourself as one?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So with that, what do you think is the most romantic song?
Okay. Most romantic song. I Only Have Eyes for You by the Flamingos. Oh,
it's so beautiful.
Yeah. The shabop shabop moments and then the reverb just like spilling all over the recording is just like pure magic. I don't know any other word for it, but magical.
Yeah. Those background vocals are everything.
Yep.
And I always feel like listening to this song, it feels like being in a dream or something, because I think it's that it's the reverb, honestly. It's the perfect reverb that is, I think I'm always, that's the reverb I'm always trying to find. It's
like
whatever they did in this song.
Right, because it like is really heavy-handed. It's like extreme reverb, but it feels still like a space. I feel like sometimes reverb sounds like reverb.
Yes,
you know, when it's used to that extreme. But this time, it just feels like you're in this very special place. It feels like a room, or some sort of chamber. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song.
I listened to that this summer, leaving a show in San Francisco and kind of heading north. And it was so foggy and we're going over the bridge into like Mendocino or whatever that area, I think. And it was incredible. Cause like everyone's piled in the car, post-show energy. And then that song comes on and it's like just a really foggy drive out of the bay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's, you know, what it's interesting too, like thinking of like what the word romantic means. Cause it can mean so many different things. But like that, like I can totally picture that having, I mean, it's been a while since I've made that drive, but I have made that drive multiple times and it's like, there is a real romanticism about it. And yeah, soundtrack it with this. Holy cow. Yep.
Yes, exactly.
I love that. Well, what is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
Okay. So the artist is The Association and the song is Never My Love, which is like one of their big singles, you know, it's gotta be one of their top tracks, but I've had some of their records that I'm kind of on the fence about. I'm like, this whole soft psych world is like, sometimes I'm feeling it. Sometimes I'm, you know, not sure, but that song is perfect to me. And it kind of, And it's also constructed a little bit more like precisely than some of their other stuff that can be really wandering and a little bit, you know, ambling in ways, and this one's just really just hits kind of on the nose.
It really feels like this self-contained sort of fully realized world. The way like, and it, it's weird because it is like this song that is like I've heard it a million times, but like when you really slow down and listen to it, it just I mean my note here is like I think this is a perfect song. It's like the melody is this like moving in like slow motion, and then like the guitars and that electric piano, and it's just like dreamy and like dual lead vocals is another weird thing, but it's and then those the harmonies in the background. I don't have, you know, I haven't listened to a lot of The Association now that I think about it. So you're saying that a lot of their stuff for you is kind of, you're not sure about, but that like, I'm like, should I spend the time? I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause like I have a kind of, I mean, it's growing. I actually got a new record shelf and so it is growing, but for a long time, my commitment was to have a small, but like really good collection of stuff I love, you know? to try to sell things as quickly as I'm like, nah, I'm not really listening to that anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's come in and out of that stack of maybes. Like, oh, maybe I should just get rid of these ones. I don't know. But like after I heard that, I really like when that song really hit, I was like, nah, I'm keeping these records.
So. Yeah. That's really interesting. That's a cool, I like that approach. I mean, like you said, you got another shelf now, but I like that. I need to, I've trimmed my record collection down a lot in recent years, but it's still too much.
Yeah.
So that's a whole other podcast. are lyrics like a big thing for you? Do you like, do you pay attention to lyrics a lot? Can they make or break a song?
They can break a song.
Okay.
Yeah, they can make a song too, but often I can't understand them. I don't know if it's like something about my musical brain. Like I don't automatically attach to them. And it usually takes a few tries of listening to really be like, oh, I really can understand what they're saying, you know?
Yeah.
Like in a live environment, I almost never can understand what people are saying.
Yeah. My partner is that like, she has a really hard time with lyrics and it'll be funny because I'll say something about a lyric and she'll be like, wait, it says that?
Yes, it's like, that's me.
Well, you love them when they're right. Well, what are your favorite lyrics?
Okay, favorite lyrics, Crimson and Clover by Tommy James and the Shondells.
Yeah.
They're totally abstract to like a perfect place, I think.
Ooh. Yeah.
Meaningless and meaningful. And just with repetition, they kind of take on their own interpretive world or something.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. I mean, it can kind of, in a lot of ways, mean what you would need it to mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was like a really unexpected answer to this, but that makes a lot of sense. Because, I mean, I love this song. I think there's another kind of perfect song. And the production is so weird. But, is there a certain, any particular line that stands out? Or is it just kind of the song as a whole?
Well, I mean, there are very few lyrics in the song.
It's true.
And they're, you know, there's a certain kind of poetic approach to lyricism that they're not doing. This is kind of on the nose and then sort of absurd or something.
Yeah.
So there's the moment where it kind of fades down, the chorus comes down, there's a moment of silence, and he just says, yeah. And that is like perfect to me. I actually sampled that and played it live in matches shows for a summer I was touring, and I would just play that song sometime, or that word, that sample on tape. And then I would like loop it and do stuff with it or whatever. But it's like that moment. And then the next line is, my mind's such a sweet thing. I want to do everything. What a beautiful feeling. And that's kind of it. It's all upstairs.
Do you know if anybody, did anybody ever like recognize or call out the sample when you were,
no one said so, but I definitely talked with people about it and they were like, that's what that all you can hear is this really like just really cool delivery. Yeah.
That's so awesome. Oh my God, I love that. That's so good. So this next section, you're actually supposed to only pick two of these, but you answered all of them. So we're gonna do a quick fire for the first three, and then I really want to talk about the last two. So
okay. Yeah.
I need to pull up the questions. Okay. So real quick. So what is the song that you have or can listen to the most?
Okay. Being It by Arthur Russell from World of Echo. Dude. It's been the alarm on my phone for like 3 years or something. Oh my
God. That's amazing.
I listen to that song every day. Yeah. I did this morning.
What a way to start the day though. My God. Oh.
Because it fades in with delay, cello delay. And that's,
this is one.
Into existence.
So like I said earlier, my kid's learning to play the cello. Like, I'm not going to show her this yet. Like, she's not ready. Like, she's just trying to learn scales and stuff. But there's going to be a day, if she sticks with it, there's going to be a day that I'm going to show her World of Echo and be like, and she's got, you know, because she's my kid and I listen to all sorts of weird shit, she's got like some like frame of reference for experimental music and stuff. But like, I can't wait if that moment happens. I need, and I'm trying not to like build it up because she might hear it and be like, okay, I don't care. Like, I don't know how you can, but this is like one of my favorite records ever made. Like, this is, I don't know. And again, it was made in like 1987. What the hell? I don't get that at all. I remember like the first time hearing it and realizing like it was just like cello and voice basically.
Yeah.
I still don't like, even knowing a lot, all the things I know, like I've made tons of music, I've done all these things, I still don't understand.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. And like at the level of the technical and compositionally, yes. where it's like, yeah. how did you get this record out of just a cello and your voice and a studio?
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable. So that's such a, what a way to start a day though. Gosh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the last song you completely fell in love with?
Yes. Dancing with a Shadow by a band called Mass Text. Chris Sutter. I just did a tour with just a little weekend thing with Jason Bala from the band Dead. D-E-H-D.
Oh, uh-huh.
He has a side project called Accessory, and I played strings for just a couple shows in the Midwest. And this person, Chris Sutter, was on that tour also, and just mentioned in passing, he was like, yeah, I'm making new music. I have this new project called Mass Text. I was like, cool, I'll check it out. And I totally fell in love with this song, and there's only one song released so far.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd never heard, like, never heard anything about this, but this song is fantastic.
Yeah, it's so good. I listened to it, I was running, and, like, listened to it in the car, and really yeah. fell in love with the song.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear more. What cover is better than the original?
I Go to Sleep by Anika.
Yeah. I love how the song
original is also very good, yes. but I think it's better.
Yeah. The way, God, there's something about like the way that it's like just put together and like that bass drum, like way up front in the mix, just kind of pounding yes. in your head. And then everything else totally. Is sort of blurred behind it. Oh.
And that just like simple delay on the word sleep is mm-hmm. so good.
Yeah, it's so good. Okay. These are the last two of the ones I was going to talk about a little more, but because nobody ever answers these two questions. What is the sexiest song?
I think the sexiest song is Baby by Donnie and Joe Emerson. Made by yeah. two brothers, which is weird that it's such a sexy song.
That is a little weird. I didn't think of that. God, that is a little weird. Oh my God. Yeah. It has like this cocoon like feeling to it. Like it's so mm-hmm. up close and intimate and. Whew.
Yeah. Yeah. It gives me chills. Just like that kind of falsetto singing and yeah. all the parts are so stylish. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sexy as hell. It really yeah. is.
Yeah.
And the best hype song.
The best hype song. It's Higher Love by Steve Winwood.
Dude, it is. I never thought of this as a hype song, but it is the best. This is the one that I've like listened to probably every day since you said
it. Yes. And good. I don't know why it's like a hype song specifically for me. It's because like, okay, a good hype song isn't just hitting it like 100%, just right. total like hype. It's got to hype you up, you know? Yeah. So it's going to like ease you into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's something about like the congas or like the bongos or whatever in the beginning. Then I'm like, okay, here we go. Here we go. And then you've got this like backup singer who's just shredding in the end. And I'm in.
I know. Yeah. I love, that's a really good point though about the buildup. Cause it like, and then as soon as like that chorus, the first one kicks in, it's that bring me, you're just like, oh hell yeah. We're doing this. Like, and yeah, I don't know. This Steve Winwood kind of rules. Like, I hadn't, yeah, never would have thought of this as a hype song. And like I have a playlist that is like my either like I work out or like doing chores or whatever, this immediately went on there. And definitely. My God. Okay. All right, last two questions. This is we're gonna try to get through this without me like falling apart, because these you'd pick two songs. Holy shit, Whitney. Okay, what's the most important song? What is it? Yeah, what is the song that means the most to you?
The song that means the most to me is Orchids by Psychic TV.
So is there a story about why?
There's sort of a story. I mean, it was put on a mix by someone I loved very much. And yeah. it was kind of like what sealed that in place. I don't want to say sealed the coffin. I don't want to think because that, you know, we're no longer together, but that was yeah. like that was a really beautiful mixtape. And this was probably like the main yeah. moment. You know, a mixtape has its own arc and it's kind of,
oh, absolutely.
And it's well done. And this was the main centerpiece, I would say.
This is this is one of my favorite songs. It is so like, this song is so like crushingly beautiful to me. Which is, again, it's like not something I ever, like when I first heard this, which has been a long time, nothing I ever really associated with like Throbbing Gristle or Psychic TV or any of this. And then yeah. like it just sort of comes out of nowhere. And it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah. So simple, so perfect. And I think the like minimalism makes it what it is, where there's not too much going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got such interesting instrumentation to, like, I don't even know what, I mean, it's probably a lot of samples. So I don't even know, but just it sounds right. Like the sound world of it is so distinct. And I didn't even realize until I was prepping for this, how many people have covered this song, which it makes sense. And none of them, again, there is no better than the original. There are some good one. Like I didn't even realize like Caroline Polachek covered this.
No way.
Yeah. Wow. Like as an alter ego, she apparently, I don't know anything about her. I mean, I know some of her stuff, but I was like, and it's actually really good, but I was like, that's really cool. I bet a lot of people, the number of people who probably had no awareness of Psychic TV, Throbbing Gristle, any of that stuff that heard of that.
True.
I was like, that's kind of cool, but
it's also so bold to cover like a perfect song. Like I want to cover a song that's kind of cheesy or something. Then
I know
space, but there's like, that is, yeah, that's really bold.
I would never cover this. So I would never go anywhere near this. but yeah, God, it's such an incredible song. Huh. Yeah. Okay. What is either in this moment of time, or maybe this is always, but what is your favorite song?
I think my favorite song is Heavy Water, I'd Rather Be Sleeping by Grouper.
Me too.
No way.
Legit. This is oh my God. When I saw that, I squealed a little bit, I think, because I was so, like, this is legitimately my favorite song.
Yeah. If I had to pick one, I'm like, this is the one.
Yeah. It is. I have a good story. I have a really good story for this one. So this originally came out on Type Records, which is run by my friend John, who they are like one of my favorite people ever, and they put out a bunch of my records back in the day. In 2007, in May of 2007, I did a Digitalis festival out in LA, and John came out. This is the first time that John and I ever met in person, actually, because they were based in the UK at the time. And we stayed in like not adjoining hotel rooms, but like we were like right next to each other. Anyway, Liz had just sent him the masters for this. And so it was like the morning, I think it was like Saturday morning before we were getting ready to go back to the venue. And they come like banging on my door. They're like, dude, you got to hear this. Liz just sent me this record that she asked if I wanted to put out and played me this song. And like from the, as soon as, I mean, it starts out so beautiful and dreamy, but as soon as that chorus, I guess it's a chorus, kicks in, it was just like, oh my God, this is like the best thing I've ever heard.
Yes.
And it's, you know, talking about Arthur Russell and how like World of Echo, it's like cello, voice, studio, and all like, this is guitar, vocals, and some maybe light effects. I don't know, just the way it's recorded. I don't even know. And you do this.
Yeah. Yep.
And oh my God, I think of the Love Is Enormous, It's Lifting Me Up. I could probably pick that as like maybe my favorite lyric, because that line is so
right. Yeah, this would also fit so many other of these questions.
I know.
You know, I could have just answered this song for like so many of you.
Yeah. So that's awesome. I'm so just, this is the first time Grouper has ever come up on this show, which I don't understand how that's possible. I realized that today and was like, what the hell? Like in the last 20 years, Grouper's probably my favorite artist. And then the fact that you picked the song. And I love everything Liz has done. Legitimately love everything that Grouper has done.
Yeah.
But Dragon Dead Deer, it'll always be, for me, it's like, it'll always, and a lot of it is associated with those memories with John and with like hearing it for the first time. And then, but yeah. So I don't know. I'm so excited you picked this.
Yeah. It's like, okay, so everyone who plays the viola, I always have like an immediate thing where I'm like, we're the same. Uh-huh. And I love that you also love this song so much, because now I'm like, we are the same. If someone connects with Grouper like this, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, you're my friend now.
Yeah.
Forever.
No, legit. That was like, And it was funny too, because and this has happened a few times on this show where I like people's answers to these questions. I'm like, oh, now I get like why I connect with what you do so much. And because like that's one of my favorite things about doing this is it's like I feel like you really get to know somebody and like how they think about things. And so yeah, when I saw this, I was like, yeah, this is why.
There's something there.
I know, you know, because you know there's like always. This is like me patting myself on the back, but like, and you mentioned it, and I'd forgot this. Like the first Matches tape was on Digitalis 100 years ago, and I was and like anytime I don't know, like I people who I've worked with, like I try to. There's always that connection there, but then when I saw this, I was like, oh, it's so much more than just. It's not just because I put out that fucking tape. It's like it's so much more.
Yes.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah.
That really goes way back. That must have been 2010.
Yeah, that was God.
Or 2011.
So. 2010 or 11. And I don't even remember because I don't even think we like knew each other. I don't even know if it was just like you sent me an email. I honestly don't remember, but
yeah. I think I just sent you an email and like a demo, but I sent you the record. Yeah. You know, because at that time I was recording everything straight to tape. It's not like it was a demo. It was like thing.
I know. I was thinking about that too. It's like, yeah, I don't have demos. I just make them the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. I was like, God, so like, because I don't really, I have a label, but it's a vanity label. It's just my own stuff. But I think about how, like, one of the things I always did, like from the beginning to the end of Digitalis was like, I always listened to demos and I always accepted demos. And it's so hard. I feel for people these days because I don't, it's so hard. Like, yeah. And I get it. Like, it's overwhelming and all that. But I had this brief moment in the last week thinking about this and thinking about, because I figured, I was like, I'm pretty sure she just emailed me. It was like, hey, I made this thing. Here's this thing I made. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, I kind of want to, I'm not going to do it, everybody. I'm not starting a fucking label. But I was like, I kind of want to start a label that is only, it's like the only stuff you put out is through demos. You get I think somebody should do that. That's not me.
I think absolutely. I don't know if we ever landed on a name for this, but my friend Jenny Paulson and I said we were going to start a tape label that was like first things. Yeah. So it's like your first record or of this project or like of this combo or this band or whatever. It's something that's only that freshness. I think that would be such a good label.
I think that would be such a good label. I think that's like, it's, I mean, cause it is, it's really hard. I feel for people. Like I'm not ever actively shopping any of my, like if somebody asked me to do something, I'm like, cool. Yeah. I've got like so much crap on my heart, not crap. I think it's good, but so much stuff recorded and I can make you a thing, you know, whatever. But like, I'm not actively, like I feel for the people who are actively trying to like get their stuff out there.
Yes.
And I mean, that was like, honestly, that was one of the things, again, when I did Digitalis, I love putting out people's first thing. Like that was so exciting to me. And like,
yes,
because I remember like the first time somebody took a chance or whatever and was like, put out one of my things. Like, and just the amount of like confidence that gave me and just how like, it just feel like you feel so good. And it was like, I love being able to be part of that with people.
Yep. And absolutely.
So yeah, that would be an amazing label idea.
Yeah. You are that person for me. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. I still have at least one copy of that tape somewhere.
Nice. Me too. I wonder if it still plays.
I wonder that too. I'm always a lot of that old stuff, I'm afraid to try.
So I had a band called E+ that I loved so much. I still love, but we've just went through this like digging it out process because I thought it was only on tape and I got out my tape and it sounds insane. That was from like 2012 or something. And it's just like all warbly and phasey and like left to right stuff happening and then like weird compressed moments. But yeah, it actually does exist in like master form. We found it and it's online. But at the time I thought that was the only copy.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this might be the end of this.
Yeah. Recording. That's really interesting too, because you think of like, at least I think of tape as being, because like CD, like I have a lot of CDR, like I've ripped most of them and have digital copies, but like CDRs stop working after, well, a lot of the time after not very long.
Yeah.
And so I always thought of tapes as a bit more permanent. And they, I mean, I think they are more permanent than that, but that's interesting that they can still, which makes sense. Like, I don't know why I thought, yeah. Ooh. Okay. Now I'm even more scared to some of my old tapes. Oh, well, anyway, I will stop talking about all that. I'm so glad that you picked this song. So yes. To bring it all back. Shout out Liz Harris. Okay.
Shout out to Liz.
All right. Well, you've got everybody, you know, they're a month old now, which in our world is apparently old news, which is stupid. Matches record, Whitney Johnson record, both out on Drag City. They are wonderful. Everybody should check them out. And keep an eye out for some shows, I guess, coming up maybe later this fall into next year.
Yeah. Next up is opening for Laurel Halo at the Epiphany Arts Center in Chicago, which is a beautiful, used to be a church, and they're doing cool projections. There's a series called Reflections that does like projection mapping. So I think that'll be a special one. It's on November 8th.
Okay. Is, I don't know how to pronounce this, Layla, is she also playing?
Yes. Yeah.
Speaking of people doing amazing stuff with cello. Good Lord.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Stuff that doesn't sound like cello. And I'm like, I can't believe that's that instrument. So they're playing duo for the Atlas. The Atlas project.
Amazing. Awesome. Yeah. Once again, a million, billion, trillion thanks to Whitney Johnson. Check out both her new albums, the one under her own name and Matches on Drag City. They are phenomenal. I'm sort of biased, but like, I mean, I'm biased in all these. I don't have people on whose music I don't love, but like, she has just done so much incredible work over the last decade plus. Somebody who just is always searching and just always refining a sound and an idea, and just, yeah, I'm, you know, she's one of those artists who anytime there's something new, like, I get really excited and I gotta hear it, and these two records are no exception. So check those out. As ever, if you enjoy the show, appreciate the show, leave a rating and review. Those things really help. If you enjoy it even more than that, you can always join the Patreon. Patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis. For as little as $3 a month, you get the full episode, because I edit out part of it for the main feed, and you get them a week early, and you get a bunch of extra stuff, and that ongoing support really helps keep things going, keep it trucking along. So everybody who's done that, I appreciate you so much. And hey, if that's not for you, take that $3, put it towards one or both of these records from Whitney. Check out her playlist, link in the show notes, all that and more. That's it. Until next time. Keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.